power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, one. Deadline.
Hi there, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to episode 38 of the Diplomacy Cast.
Do you like how when Eric says the episode number, he sounds really surprised that we're doing another episode?
It's pretty awesome. Every episode feels like our last.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons it's the level of quality that it is.
That's right. On account of we're never topping what we did last time.
Exactly.
And yet here we are, attempting again to top it with episode 38 of Diplomacy Cast, which is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. And we are your hosts. I changed it a little.
Yeah.
A little
I'm Nathan Barnes.
I'm Eric Mead.
Yeah.
It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, we've missed you guys.
Yeah. In today's episode of Diplomacy Cast, we got stuff
going on.
We got some hot off the press. We got some emails. We got some, I guess I'm kind of burying the lead. What we really have is Chris Martin.
Yeah.
Chris
Who
Martin.
Who we've heard from before. I know.
He'll be our first three-time guest, I believe.
Well, if he would stop winning things, we'd stop putting him on the program. Oh. This is really your fault, listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Why do you just keep coughing up solos to Chris Martin or whatever you're doing there? He went and won DipCon.
Yes, he did.
Again.
It's kind of
recently.
Like boring at this point, almost.
Really boring.
Like, look, Chris Martin won again.
On a run, like
like it was 1999, literally.
Exactly. He's en fuego. He's winning. I'm sure he's winning. Whoever drafted him, I'm sure he's winning their fantasy diplomacy for him again. And he's doing whatever he wants.
He's doing
basically.
He's doing All the money and the girls are probably just going straight to his head.
Yeah. He's probably doing a line of drugs. Right as we speak, as he's listening to this, he's just lining up a line of the drug. And
it's amazing how sophisticated you sound. I just want to let you know.
Yeah, that's because I know the drugs.
All right.
Then we're going to do other stuff too.
That's good stuff. Actually.
Which is we're not going to do a big power plays this time. It's just going to kind of be. Well, I don't want to sell it too hard, but it's kind of a housekeeping episode.
Yeah.
Whoa, slow down. I know.
No, but honestly, we're being a little facetious, but there's some good stuff in this episode. We're going to be retooling a couple of things, and we're going to be asking for your help about some big ideas that we have. So
this will be the
definitely listen up, and definitely tune in. We got some good stuff in the works.
Yeah. Fairly big announcements right after this. Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back. We want stuff from you guys.
We're going to try engaging the listeners a little bit.
Yeah. This comes out of a sort of some conversations we've been having about the show, the direction of the show, that kind of thing.
And also this last episode.
Yeah.
That we really, I have to say, we came off at episode 37 and really enjoyed it. Like specifically the portions in which we had those scenarios that we were going back and forth about. We really enjoyed doing that, and we thought, you know, we could do this more.
Yeah, that was the most fun we've had making a show in a long time.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Good.
I'm not sure if you guys enjoyed it as much as we did, but we thought it was a good gimmick. What we would love from you guys is more of those. So if you have no idea what we're talking about, go listen to episode 37 and then come back.
Right.
Like, we'll wait. Okay, good.
Good.
Yeah. And if you have any more ideas like that, any sort of like those diplomacy situations that you would like to hear us break down a little bit, great. In fact, if you would like somebody else other than us, like some really good diplomacy player out there somewhere to break this stuff down too, we have some ideas about including some guests.
Yeah.
What we're looking at is if you feel like emailing us anyway, if you feel like challenging us to do something, or posting on Facebook, I guess it's just as good.
I would recommend Facebook over email if you're a Facebook person. Facebook gets to us faster, and the email, we always get it, but sometimes there's a lag.
Yeah.
Especially with two of us looking at it, there can be a lag. With Facebook, it it gets to us much quicker.
Also, good idea, because that way it can be a bit of a brainstorming session pre-show. That way we can kind of come back and
everyone
say,
can discuss it.
Ooh, I like where you're going with that, but maybe do it like this instead, or you know, that you guys can work together to come up with them. That is, if you like this idea, listeners.
Yeah. I mean, if we don't get any ideas, then we just won't do it.
Right, exactly. But that was the thing that we liked for ourselves, each other, you, and for, but like when we had Siobhan on and she, we threw a couple of, or two, we thought that was like a good thing to do for guests. So there's that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So get to brainstorming. If it was some game you were in and you want to just get it to the point where you're like, okay, what would other diplomacy players do in this situation?
Yeah, think of it that way. Like, you can have these situations in which, yeah, I mean, we all have these, right?
Yeah.
You had these like one point in a game where you're just like, man, I knew I was at this crossroad,
mm-hmm.
and I chose, this is my analysis, and this is what I chose.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the outcome kind of doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
What would you have done? And you might, it can be pleasing to just hear how other people would have broken down that information. And so that's basically what we're going to do.
Right.
We're going to be less inclined to do it if you're currently like in a game and you want to know what to do.
Yeah,
the reason,
we're
the reason,
not getting to it fast enough.
We're just not going to get to it
unless
fast
you're
enough.
Playing 120 day deadlines.
Yeah.
Per
so don't
or
so
like
don't
that.
Don't
yeah.
approach it that way, because we won't get back to you fast enough, and then where are you going to be at?
Right.
So mostly these should be things that you just, or you could just do like, you know, brain teasers.
Totally made up things.
And yep. And as Eric mentioned, we can also, we're also, if there's somebody that you want to answer the question, or there's a diplomacy player you'd like to hear from in a particular scenario, like, yes, Nathan and Eric, I'd like to hear what you think, but I also want to hear what someone other than Chris Martin thinks about it.
Mm-hmm. Or even Chris Martin.
Or even Chris Martin.
If they have a cell phone, we'll find a way to ask them.
but yeah, that's generally
the diplomacy
idea.
Cast guarantee.
Yeah, exactly.
If they have a cell phone, we'll ask them.
We need bad suits and like a flashing 1-800 number.
We
it's
won't be undersold.
It's going to be amazing. No, and going off of that, if there's particular people that you want us to talk to about a particular thing, it's not necessarily a scenario. We realize we haven't really been good about making it clear that if there's a guest or somebody that you'd like to hear from,
mm-hmm.
we want to, that's helpful to us.
We take requests.
Yeah, we'll mm-hmm. definitely hunt them down. It helps if there's a topic or yep. something you want to ask about, not just like, do you know whose voice I really enjoy listening to in headphones?
It's Andy Bartolone.
Andy Bartolone.
Sampling.
Whatever. I mean, whoever it is for you. So those are the first two things.
That's that. Okay. Yeah. Another thing. Don't feel like contributing one of those, still want to contribute to the show, today's your lucky day. Call now, 1-800-DIPLOMACY-CAST.
Three easy payments of clicking send.
Yeah. How about if you are a person, we got to talking about how, man, we haven't done a show in a while where we try and sort of urge everybody out there to be building the hobby in their city. You know, like
right.
we've done three, maybe which is a lot of those, how to get people interested in playing face to face and building up your hobby, like from Jim O'Kelly to Christian Padone to just amongst ourselves. We've talked about it a couple of times. I can't even remember everybody that we've talked to now, but we really want to keep that as sort of a core thing of the show, but we're not sure that we have anything new to say about it.
Yeah.
At this point, except go back and listen to the last episodes, or we could just kind of say the same things again about how to try and build stuff up in your city, especially because only really one of us has really ever made that effort. It's Nathan and not me.
Basically, Eric wants someone to be somebody else because he's sick of listening to me.
Pretty much.
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, no, you're perfectly fine. It's the grating way in which you explain it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really
exactly.
getting to me.
So really, our point here is, want to come on the show? Want to actually be somebody who is a guest on Diplomacy Cast, or want to do it through email, even if you don't want to come on the show?
Yeah.
But are you a person who has organized or is attempting to organize some serious face-to-face where you live? Whether you're the first, second, third, or 27th person to sort of take the reins of doing this in any given area, we want to know your trials, your tribulations, what your process, what's working, what's not working. We'd like to meet some new people out there who are trying to build up the hobby in their place where they live.
Yeah.
And if If it's not a place we even knew there was a hobby, even better. Yeah.
I'm realizing this is becoming like an elaborate Craigslist sort of let's get together sort of ad. Well, that's nice.
Major announcements, I said.
Exactly.
Major.
No, I know. Yeah. No, I'm not critiquing it. It just it's suddenly becoming a little more personal.
But
we want to meet new people.
Totally.
We're open. We're open to just about anybody. New people are great.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Send like a headshot or something.
Yeah, so something.
Something. Be female.
That's going to be helpful. No. That's really going to be.
We'll edit that out.
In post. We'll get that in post.
Yeah, yeah. It totally didn't mean that. Don't be female. I mean, be female if you're female. No. Okay, that got weird.
You're welcome.
Okay. That was that.
If you ever wonder what I bring to the conversation, you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Just making fun of me as I go.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. Okay, so those are the major announcements. We're super serious about it, guys. Like, I think we really want to take the podcast to a place where it's a little bit more your show and not just things that were going on in our heads, because the last time we did this, we really kind of liked what came out of it. So, that's really basically it. Help us out.
That's not it. There's a whole other thing.
I meant this section.
Oh, yeah.
Pants.
Yeah.
Wow.
No.
That's the podcast. See you guys later. Peace out.
There's something else that I want to ask people to let us know if they're doing it. Hey, one more. Neither of those other two suggestions interesting to you? That's okay. Still want to be on the show? That's an option. Are you playing a lot online? We're still not talking.
I didn't know we had a fourth thing.
Yeah. We're still not hearing enough from people who are playing a lot online.
That wasn't in dress. We didn't do this in dress.
And by dress, you mean what I read to you off my phone before I hit record? Sorry about that. Yes, it was, first of all.
All right. It's good. This is solid. This is solid. Definitely what we talked about.
Perfect radio right here. Yeah. If you've been playing a lot online, we want to talk to more people who are playing a lot online.
That is true.
On air, whatever. Reach out if you feel like you're like you've been playing a lot online. Your game's getting good. What I'm getting at with this one is honestly, we don't play the game that much anymore, and we're starting to wonder: have we gone as far as we can in teaching strategy? Probably not. There's lots of other things we have to say about strategy that y'all still be interested to hear, especially those of you that are at like sort of a beginner to intermediate level. But we acknowledge fully that there's people that are probably way better at this game than us.
Yeah.
And we want to talk to you guys.
They don't listen to this show, though.
Well, we'll find out. If anyone says, hey, I've been playing a lot online, I'll talk to you.
Oh, guys. The online folks. I just meant the face-to-face.
Oh, the face-to-face. No.
Yeah, they don't listen.
They have no time. They can't be bothered.
Well, it's all the drugs. The lines of the drugs.
The drug using. Yeah, the pot taking.
Yeah.
They're all doing.
They're doing the
snorting the pot.
They're
probably doing up there.
Big, huge needles full of pot.
Jim O'Kelly, stop snorting pot. All right. So, start a conversation with us. If you're a person that's sort of advanced tactically, would be interested in talking tactics further with the likes of us some kind of a...
Use the Facebook. Okay. You know where it's at. Facebook.com/diplomacycast. We'll chat with you on there.
Yes.
Send us a... post it on the wall. It'd be great. That way we can start a conversation with everybody else that's listening.
Yep.
So.
Okay, I'm done. I really am done. Let's get to Hot Off the Press.
I want to read some email.
Email!
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press?
Yeah, people don't use the press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
We just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
All right, cool. Press. Press.
God, it's so hot!
Hot.
Yeah. No, emails. Emails, guys. We got actually
a lot of new people this time. That's what I like.
Literally, this is the only way Eric gets any fulfillment. Okay. And I've been hearing about these emails for a long time now. He's very excited. Careful. So thank you to everyone that wrote.
Yeah.
Please do it. It makes Eric very happy.
Very. Extremely happy.
It does.
We just spent like 20 minutes making them tell us, but like making them promise to email us. So
Yeah.
So here we are. Again, with the email.
All right, tell us all about it.
Kevin Burt.
Mr. Burt.
New listener.
Okay.
He says, I just discovered you via a Facebook search for diplomacy.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Good solution. I've started with the ancient podcasts, and despite the audio quality, enjoy them very much. Fair.
I like that Kevin's up front with this critique. You know, they're not, I mean, they suck, but they're, you know, they sound terrible.
Yeah.
But there's some good information if you can just kind of get past that.
Fun fact, like if you look us up on IMDb in the trivia section of Diplomacy Cast, did you know that Eric Mead edited those first three episodes himself?
They're not as good.
No. I mean, they're awesome content-wise.
Yeah, I mean, they're great.
They are, yes. Honestly, yeah. But,
self-deprecation, though. It's really kind of our bread and butter here.
Yeah, yeah. He says, I'm hoping to catch up to episode 36 plus in my lifetime, which is actually fair. That's a lot of work. In a cast about Russia, you mentioned blowing up a fleet.
Yep.
I understand how that would be done and the advantage of an army, but how do you intentionally get yourself in that position? With Turkey's cooperation, just good fortune to find yourself needing a retreat? Thanks for the wealth, honestly, of valuable intel I am gaining. If, like me, most new players don't enter a game with a strategy, but just spontaneous moves, your program is worth its weight in electrons. Later, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, awesome. Kevin. No, that's good.
Go ahead.
Blown up a fleet.
Since it's sort of a Barnes move.
I do enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. There's really two ways of doing it. One is infinitely more likely to work. Mm-hmm. But we'll start with the one that's probably not. The more of the gambit. Either way, you're going to be going down. You're moving that fleet, Sevastopol, to Armenia. Yeah. Either way.
Armenia is where it goes to die.
Yeah.
This is Spring 01. This is your Spring 01.
This is your Spring. Yeah, definitely Spring 01. Mm-hmm. So the deal is you can talk to Turkey about it, or you can just do it. The gambit is just doing it and then having the option to do it later and then, like, hoping you can convince him. There's no advantage to that, except if Turkey doesn't know it's coming, he has no opportunity to tell everyone else that this is kind of what you're doing.
In most
cases, you're going to coordinate with Turkey
because Turkey
feels that getting rid of that fleet makes his life a lot easier. So he's willing to essentially slow his advance somewhat. Mm-hmm. Turkey doesn't get anywhere other than Bulgaria in the first friggin' year anyway, typically.
Yep.
So the only reason he has that army in Constantinople is just to support Bulgaria when Austria and Turkey or Russia or whoever's, pressing
on. Well, he can't have an army in Khan because he's gone Constantinople to Bulgaria.
In general.
Black Sea. Oh, I'm sorry.
In general, people move Khan to Bull, Ank to Black, Smyrna to Khan. That's a typical boring opening. The reason people are going to Khan is to get it out or to lend that support.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So it's fairly low risk to have the army go instead to Ank.
Ankara. Right.
So that it can blow up the fleet.
There's not something
usually Turkey is doing with that army other than throwing a support.
That he probably won't need. I said yes.
Right. Okay. Sorry, I should have explained that a little bit better.
No, that was very well explained. My fault. We're both a little testy today. We have hangovers.
Only one of us does.
Yeah, no.
Sucker! Yeah. No, I had three all night.
Fair. All right, anyway.
Anyway, so usually you want to coordinate with Turkey. There are times, just given the circumstances of the board, where you don't. You just want to do it and have the option of doing something else later. Because if they do something, because depending on what Turkey does, maybe it leaves Ankara vulnerable. Maybe it gives you a negotiating position. Blah, blah, blah. There are reasons not to do it. In most cases, you coordinate with Turkey because the idea is to be as expeditious as possible. You want to get that fleet converted to an army by spring 1902.
Yeah.
So really, basically, that's what happens. You just sell this to Turkey right from the beginning. You're like, hey, let's blow up the fleet. We'll rock and roll.
Yep. So the by the book way to do it again is you go Sevastopol to Armenia. You let the Turk into the Black Sea with his fleet. You go Smyrna to Ankara to follow the fleet. So now you've got a supported attack on Armenia. The Russian fleet just holds or whatever, and lets itself get destroyed. The problem in this case. The tactical thing that's interesting about it, I think, is the more trusting way to do it, I suppose, would be that Turkey then leaves the Black Sea and that makes the Black Sea the mover to Armenia to do the fleety blowy uppy. But that's kind of crap, tactically.
That's garbage.
You would want a Turk that the two of you are trusting each other enough at this point that you get to keep the Black Sea. He makes
as Turkey.
He makes the army the mover to Armenia, and then the plan for O2 is now you've got yourself an Armenia to, say, Bulgaria convoy.
Right.
Set up. And yet, like, at this point, say, if you're voluntarily letting your Russian fleet get blown up, you probably trust the Turk enough that you don't actually want, like, you don't care about the Black Sea anymore at that
point.
Well,
not only that, if you're going to be if you're not comfortable in this setup, having Turkey have, at the end of and the beginning of fall of 01, an army Armenia and a fleet Black,
right.
If you're uncomfortable with that, don't do this. Don't do it at all.
Yeah.
Because you are worse off jamming that fleet into Armenia. You destroy all of your momentum as an RT, which, because the only reason you're doing this is to do an RT.
Mm-hmm.
You destroy all your momentum for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just come up with a different plan.
Right. Now, and then there's one other part that's worth talking about this. While you're doing this crazy kabuki ballet thing of, like, weird moves that don't necessarily make any sense except to be accomplishing this one specific thing of blowing up the fleet, like,
yeah,
it's sort of a bunch of weird random moves, right? Are you against five other players who know exactly what they're looking at?
Yeah.
When you're doing it? If so, you'd better be really sure that the benefit that you're getting from it outweighs the, like, five people gathering together in a group without you guys and being like, oh, they're blowing up the fleet. You know, like, if everybody knows exactly what's going on, it also might not be worth doing.
Right.
You may want to do something a little more concealing.
Right. You could technically do it from Smyrna.
Yeah.
And then instead of the fleet getting actually blown up, you just remove the fleet.
Right. Right, right. Rather than choosing to retreat to the Turkish dot.
Yeah, just remove it. Which is basically what normally happens anyway. It doesn't actually get destroyed because there's a retreat to... Usually there's a retreat to Sevastopol.
Back to Sev, yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
Unless you've done something odd, like drop Moscow down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
possible.
Correct.
But so there's usually a retreat anyway, so it doesn't actually get destroyed. It gets voluntarily removed. So you could do it that way, but that also requires you to come up with a weird reason why you end up in Smyrna.
Yeah.
Like, you can't bounce an Ankh with bounce in Khan with Ankh. That's
yeah, I would say if you care at all about deception, even though this seems sort of deceptive, don't do it in a room full of people who all already know it, or it's not deceptive at all, and in fact it's more of a telegraph than almost anything else you can do as RT. So don't do that. Assuming that you have some neighbors that aren't wise to this particular gambit, then feel free, as all of this ridiculous kabuki is going on, to ham it up a little bit after orders get read. Feel free to be like, what are you doing in Armenia? What are you doing in the Black Sea? Why are you attacking?
There is... I can't agree more. You might as well ham it up. You could technically do this from the other side. You could do it from Romania.
Yeah.
And that would require... But that requires more or less the Turk jamming... It ends up having the Turk get Romania.
Right. Instead of Bulgaria, probably.
Or jamming the fleet in there, which isn't optimal. Neither one of those is that great for your position. Because the only advantage to doing it from Romania is that it's at least more plausible that you can make a better... You can sell a story that you're not in an RT a little bit better.
Right.
But it screws your position.
Right.
It's suboptimal.
And
it's not as good as it could be.
By the way, you don't have to do this all in O1 either. Like, it can be one of those things that, like, all right, the jig is up. Everybody knows we're working together anyway. Hey, let's find an opportunity to blow up this fleet at a time when it becomes important. Like maybe in O2, it looks like Russia isn't going to get a build, where you can sort of give him a virtual build by doing doing that and getting Turkey to build instead. So something like that. Like,
you could also do the thing where you try and pass the Russian fleet through Constantinople to do it in the south, and then depending on how the winds of fate are going, just blow it up in Constantinople.
You could blow it up in Khan, you could blow it up in Bol, you could... There's definitely things you can do later that don't have to be this very specific weird thing in Armenia.
Which is the textbook. When someone says blowing up the fleet...
Mm-hmm.
They're referring to what we're talking about. Armenian Spring 01 drop to Armenia.
Yep. That's what we think about that gambit.
Yeah. It's...
Moving on.
It's... I like it, but it's hard to get... I can't pull it off anymore. I mean...
Yeah. Everybody's just like, oh, they're doing that thing.
Oh, you're doing that thing.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I don't know how much I love it as Russia anyway. Like, no, I kind of like having a southern fleet, actually. It depends.
Depends on... the whole deal is if you're going to have an RT...
Right.
Then it's just in the way.
Shouldn't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. If you just end up, like, really doing the long-term alliance and keeping that fleet,
then terrible.
Usually, like, the fleet just sort of ends up an employee of the Turk anyway.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it sails through at some point, and then you've got, like, one dumb med fleet as part of Turkey's fleet campaign or something. So there's good reasons for it.
Yeah,
but, like, if you're not totally sure that's what you want to do, you might just want to not do it because you'd rather have your fleet.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, too. Anyway. Okay.
Moving on.
Garrett Dixon. Hey, guys. First of all, thanks so much for doing the podcast.
You are welcome, Garrett.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's all there is.
Yep,
No, you wrote one. I'm just kidding. Oh, by the way, Kevin, who that was that last email, also wrote us one saying he wants it, when we do our variants episode, he wants us to do Machiavelli.
Yes,
as one of the things we talk about.
We do have a number of people on Facebook that have asked for variants. So
we're getting hammered with this now. So yeah, I guess it's probably time.
1900. Modern,
yeah,
a couple other ones. Yeah, so we'll
talk a little diplomacy winks.
No, we're
little roulette.
We can talk about those.
Yeah.
We might as well.
Those are the ones Nathan and I invented.
Yeah, so we might as well. Yeah, it's, you know, we have the microphone, so. Suckers!
Yeah, exactly. No, we'll find the top five variants and do a little look at them really soon. Maybe even next episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, Garrett says, hey guys, first of all, thanks so much for doing the podcast. I've only listened up through episode 12. Just found the podcast a week ago. Holy cow. 12 in a week is not bad.
Yeah, it's delicious, in fact.
You're going to be super disappointed when you get, like, do 3 more weeks of this, and now you have to wait a month for one more. But I've really...
Clearly hasn't gotten to one of the April Fool's episodes.
Yeah, right. already feel infinitely more informed, right, is what he said. Okay. I've been playing less than a year and exclusively through Droid Dippy.
Oh, Droid
Dippy. This is interesting. I played roughly 60 or 70 games in that time span, and I absolutely love the game. How? How did... I don't know what the Droid...
It's because you have an iPhone.
I'm fascinated.
You don't have a Droid.
I can't get Droid Dippy on an iPhone?
I don't know.
Mm.
But it's... It's right in the name. It's
read the rest
droid.
Of this email. I'm gonna search.
Go ahead and check it out. I have played it. It is, and there's a bunch of face-to-face players that play it. I think I was very early in trying it out, and I had problems with the interface and the level of interest. People would just drop out really quite quickly. So it sounds like that's not been Garrett's experience. You know, it's frustrating to have people just disappear. Okay.
No, it does not exist.
No, of course.
On the iPhone. Let's see. So
he absolutely loves the game.
He absolutely loves the game. He's been wanting to play face-to-face for a long time.
Great.
And on listening to us guys solidified that he needed to go to a diplomacy tournament.
That's good job, Garrett.
There's the juicy bit of the email. I recently moved to Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
I think that's what...
I'm guessing.
Girardeau.
And have been looking online for people who play face-to-face, but to no avail. Okay. I saw WDC will be in Chicago next summer, and
that's
I'm
true.
All in to go. However, I don't want that to be my first experience with face-to-face.
It actually wouldn't be a terrible place to go for your first face-to-face experience. Just as a side before we get any further.
Yeah.
A World Diplomacy Championships tends to be to draw a lot of people,
yeah.
Which means if there's a less of a concentration of really, really good experienced players. You get a lot of people that have a lot less experience as opposed to a tournament that you might go to that has just four boards and 80% of them right. are just, let's just, for lack of a better word, say sharks or yeah. people that are just, you know, they've played, you know, once you log 200 games, it's like 200 it's face-to-face games, like, you've kind of seen it all, and it's you know, it can be a more intimidating experience.
Yeah.
Worlds tends to have a lot of players with a more diverse skill set. So, if it turns out...
Having said that...
it's not a bad thing.
That's true. Also, having said that, just go in with a realistic attitude. You might not win this tournament.
Oh, yeah. You're not like, going
if it's
to
your first face-to-face experience, you might not win. So if you go there and take four eliminations in the weekend, learn a lot doing it, have a good time, that's a great outcome for your first tournament. But
specifically, if you can get four eliminations and then come back, that is a victory.
Because
that's what all of us did.
And you probably won't go. Right. You might get three and some weird survival.
Or you might do amazing.
Right. You never know. But
you never
just,
know.
Just don't plan on, like, if winning diplomacy games is a large amount of, like, how you sort of feel good about yourself, or, like, you know, like a large amount of your self-confidence is based on that, then that might not be the best idea.
Yeah.
But if losing and learning is okay with you, then
we all
you'll have a freaking blast in Chicago.
Yeah. That is going to be... Eric and I will both be there.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so we hope we'll see you there. Mm-hmm. Now we'll let me... longer aside than I intended, I'll let Eric finish.
Well, and then he goes on to ask, do we know people in the Missouri... in Missouri? And I guess maybe I should even look at a map to see just how close to Chicago that is, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. But
It's like 600 miles.
It is?
Something like that.
All right.
Well, you type it up. We have Google.
Yeah,
we have it right here. Clicky click.
I'm Googling.
So it is a little bit away. It's not ridiculous. It's not across the entire country or anything.
What I was going to say is that Chicago is probably the closest, like, really built up hobby to
to
where you are.
Yes.
And so it's a question of whether you could get over to those guys and play a couple of house games in between now and then. Because
they're super active. I mean, like, it's hard to justify driving all the way. All the way up from Missouri to Chicago just for a house game. But there's a lot of house games. The Windy City Weasels.
Yeah.
It's not
far.
Yeah, well, type directions and then you're Chicago.
All right.
And you can see how far it is. All right. So they're doing a lot of games right now. And if you want to do a face-to-face game, it's going to be, I don't know, something you can do pretty easily.
Yeah.
It'll be quite a drive to do it, but, you know.
Yeah. All right. I'm not getting the answer that I want here. The point being, that's probably the closest one that we know about, which means...
Yes.
You get to be the guy that starts it in Missouri.
Yeah. All right.
It starts it in...
St. Louis must have... It will probably be the better place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Density of people. But we're not aware of anybody in St. Louis... or anybody in the South other than Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
In North Carolina.
North Carolina?
South Carolina.
North Carolina.
Those are the only... That's it.
Yep. So if you want some tips on how to maybe just find some people in your own area that you might be able to persuade to play this game, there's a couple of podcasts about that back in our local archives. I know you said you're listening through, but I'll bet you'll get to some pretty soon where people have done that. Barring that, go find Windy City Weasels.
Yeah,
so
that's going to be
our two
close.
Bits of advice, and our most important bit of advice is go to Worlds.
Go to Worlds.
Go. It'll be fun.
It'll
Who
be.
Cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
You'll see our ugly mugs there.
You'll have a blast. You'll see us. You'll meet, you know, all these people that you've been listening to marathon-style podcast interviews with. You'll meet them. You'll play diplomacy with them. Maybe you'll have alliances with them because you've been listening to the show and you know their weaknesses. Whatever. There's so much fun, these tournaments.
Yeah.
And it's killing me that I'm not at more of them. But anyway. Okay. Thanks for that email. There's even more.
Thanks, Garrett.
Should we just keep going?
Yeah, let's just keep going. We gotta do. Let's get through this.
Alec Bug.
Alec.
Hey guys, new listener, and I love the show. This is three for three. New listeners who love the
show. Guys,
why
I can't thank you enough.
Yeah,
for just making Eric's day.
For real. Thank you. No, I mean, thank you for listening to the show. Maybe we don't say that enough. I don't know.
I've been playing Diplomacy about 10 years now, off and on, with a group of friends and
nice.
Some online forums. The idea is, see, there you go. There's your hobby, you know, base of a city hobby right there. Now I'm just out of control. The idea I had, and I'm not sure if you've done this before or not, but would be to run an actual game of Diplomacy and have each person give updates after each fall, spring season about who they're working with and who they think they can trust, stabs that just happened, etc. Not sure how well it would translate to the pod, but it'd be really cool.
This would be the interesting thing about this, and I like it, is we would basically have to, sort of like, do you guys remember The Real World?
Yeah.
Or like any of those reality shows where they like cut away and then there's like somebody talking about what's going on. Totally. And they do that cutaway. That's basically what we'd have to do. And the only struggle would be, if you're doing it mid-game, you would have to build in sort of like a 20-minute, 40-minute break after every year so that we could record.
Yeah.
Do like short mini interviews with everyone, all seven players, and then we would go through all of that information, pick out the best stuff, and then string it together into a podcast, which actually sounds like a really fun project.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be tough, and this doesn't mean it's something we won't do. It's just logistically speaking, it's going to make a game last.
Yep,
like a really long time.
Here's the good news, though.
Unless we come up with another way. The other way to do it would be to mic everybody,
mm-hmm.
and then just quickly interview them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that might be a little faster.
Yeah, we have a similar idea. Yeah, we love this idea, and we have one that maybe you guys like even more, and we'll start clamoring for. Speaking of WDC,
that's right. We're gonna do this.
We think maybe that, assuming Nathan and I don't make the top board of WDC, you don't have to let that.
We might. You never know.
Assuming that Nathan and I don't make the top board of WDC, and assuming that there is a top board of WDC or something like it coming up in next summer. That is, we think that maybe we're going to bring the gear and sit down and kind of do a running commentary of the game as it goes.
Yeah.
Kind of a.
It's not a maybe. We're definitely doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
We've confirmed it with the mm-hmm. tournament management. This is absolutely something that's going to happen. The only hiccup might be is if one or both of us are in the top four.
In which case, Matt fills in, I would say. Or somebody.
But
yeah.
This is happening.
Somebody who's not there fills in with to guest co-host. But yeah.
Already
we're not
making
the top four. I was kidding about that. Don't worry. We might.
You never know.
But so our idea for format on that, and this is still in the early stages and we're open to suggestions here. Our idea for the format of that is going to be we will relay, either just record somebody reading the orders or else just reread the orders after the orders get read or something like that. And then kind of give our thoughts on what just happened and maybe why. And so that you can step through the entire top board of WDC with us.
Yeah.
And as outsiders, which we will be.
Yeah.
In this game.
We might do like a visual guide that you could do with the game. The folks at Web Diplomacy are also going to be sort of live updating the game. And so what they're going to be doing is within the Web Diplomacy interface,
mm-hmm.
every time moves are made, they go ahead and update it so that the map, people can follow the map and people can comment on the map. So we will either... depending on how accessible that is at a later time, we might include a link with that podcast so that you can kind of look at the map and listen to us at the same time.
That sounds like a lot of work, man.
Oh yeah, somebody else. Yeah. Wow, I'd have to have like two tabs open. Oh, yeah. That's crazy. I mean, I usually like to open up my podcast and just stare at like the visualizations. I don't really like to look at anything
like
else.
Like Eddie Verson did after he listened to his own interview.
Exactly.
I don't understand why I'm just looking at this blank screen that just has like a little moving thing that says which. Yeah, Eddie didn't know what a podcast was.
It's not going to be video.
I don't know. So maybe next time...
I think
next
you should spice it up.
Maybe next time put a little video in there. Just pictures of boards while I talk. Do you think you could do that? No, Eddie, that's really not how that works.
That's something different.
Bless your heart, though.
So, yes. So, point being, slight sidetrack there, but point being, that's definitely something that's going to happen at WDC.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have opinions about it, just let us know.
Yeah.
Because... We've never tried to do it before, so any suggestions are totally welcome.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Email wise, right. Yeah. We had somebody write in Jerome Green. He was asking, "Do we know anything about the hobby in London?"
I can connect you to people.
Yeah. All I can tell you is there was some stuff when we interviewed Toby Harris not that long ago,
yes,
where he was talking about some things that are going on in
MannerCon happened.
MannerCon and that sort of thing. We don't have much info for you, but thanks for listening to the show, Jerome.
Yeah, definitely.
So
Jerome, hit us up on Facebook, and I'll connect you.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get you to Toby and Lester. And,
not a problem.
And I'm very sorry that we're going to get you to Toby and Dan Lester. Your life used to be fun. It's going to be horrible.
They're good chaps.
Yeah,
good people
for sure. That's all we got for email.
Thanks everyone for making Eric so very happy,
yeah,
and for giving us a chance to chat with you. We look forward to a couple more, and yeah, excellent.
And you know what to do as far as all these other things that we got coming up. Now enough of this nonsense. It's all Chris from here on
thank
out.
Thank golly gosh.
DQ DQ DQ. Here we go.
All right.
Stay tuned.
Chris Martin. Tuned.
Joining us now, as promised,
as hinted at,
the champion of everything in the universe.
I mean, many years ago in the past.
Well,
I mean,
sometimes
not like right now.
Well, I don't know. What are you doing right? He's in Vegas right now. He lives in D.C., but maybe, I don't know. Maybe, should we not say? Chris Martin?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Undisclosed location? Which would you prefer? Home with your family?
No. I've checked in on the Facebooks from Poolside, so
nope.
it's public information that I'm in Vegas.
Good. Very good.
Good. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
You're our most frequent guest, I think.
Most guesty guest.
Yeah, you're the guestest.
Yeah.
I aspire to be like the Steve Martin of Saturday Night Live.
That's right.
For the Diplomacy Cast.
I guess unless
it's
we can't
a regular, you know.
Yeah. Matt's more of the Steve Martin. Like, people are like, he's
okay,
not actually on the cast. No. But you're like the Alec Baldwin, I'm going to say.
Alec Baldwin, I can work with that.
Yeah. He's always there.
If I have to be one of the Baldwin brothers.
Yeah. it's a great choice. How are things, Chris?
I tell you, things are good. As we speak right now, I'm in the final build-up to, I'm doing an Ironman distance triathlon,
mm-hmm,
in the end of September, so that's coming up. I'm looking forward to that. And the school year has started, so my wife and son are back at school. And it's just a good time getting ready to help run Tempest in a Teapot.
Yeah.
In October in Washington, D.C. That's going to be a lot of fun.
We'll go ahead and start there if you want.
Great. We're back in Silver Spring, Maryland location. We're playing three rounds of Diplomacy on 2 days, Saturday, and Sunday. Central clock, drop dead timing, Summer Square scoring system. We've got 30 travelers confirmed already. So 4 boards of travelers confirmed. Thank you.
Yes,
and
well,
we're hoping to get 6 or 7 boards, you know.
Wow.
By the time we rope in, you know, all the locals.
Are you at the same
High?
Is the same hotel you used in the past?
Yes, this is the Sheraton in downtown Silver Spring. Easy access to bars and restaurants.
Yeah, it's a great location.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. Walking distance from the metro. And, of course, we're happy to pick up anybody from the airport.
Yeah.
If they want to come to 3 of the reasonably located airports in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, it was really a really great location. I enjoyed it when I was there a couple of years ago, more than a few years ago now. But It just sits right in the middle. It's easy access. You can get anywhere you want to get. It's great.
I'm fairly sure that's the event when Nathan and I originally started talking like Sean Connery.
It might be, yes. That's the event.
That was that.
A lot of things happened at that event.
Yeah. I think that there's actually a plaque on one of the walls that commemorates that.
Like one of those historical,
George Washington slept here kind of plaques.
Exactly.
This plague started here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's right. Good. So, once again, you've won something.
Yeah.
And
I have.
I know. And I'm curious, some of the details, and I know you have a story to tell, so I mean, we want to give you as much space to tell your story.
Sure.
How'd you win?
How'd I do it?
Well, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know, I forget how much we said in the first part of this. It was the DipCon this year, which was in Philadelphia, hosted by friend of the show Christian Padone and his peeps, trying a new location. Pretty new tournament and hosting DipCon and got a lot of travelers, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a big event. There were six boards every round, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Four
rounds of diplomacy. And Christian runs a great event. Mm-hmm. He's just top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic guy, and I'm very happy to have been able to go up there and spend some time playing diplomacy. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it was a four round event,
and you get to drop a round. I did that. Actually, I sat out one round because as part of my training plan, part of my commitment, to go into travel when I'm in the heart of that sort of training season, is that I would go on a long bike ride while I was there. Cause I live close enough that I could bring my bike with me. So I went out and rode from Philadelphia to Valley Forge and back that morning. So I missed one round of diplomacy.
But, would you attribute most of your success in this event to that bike ride?
I would have to say that there's a certain element of calm and grounding that deep fatigue brings you when you play diplomacy.
And why doesn't that ever work for Brian Shelton?
I would say that Brian doesn't really ever get to a state of grounded calmness.
That's because he never gets really fatigued.
He's too fit.
He's a monster.
So
there was, it sounds like there was a strategy involved here, an overarching sort of approach that you took. Tell our listeners how you did it.
Well, okay, so I would say that whenever I go to a big tournament, right, I kind of know that there's an element of luck to it, and how are you going to get the draws? Or what are the boards going to look like? Who's going to be near you? All of that has to break your way in some way, shape, or form for you to have a chance to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the three rounds that I played, I had at least one, and sometimes more than one, top-notch, world-class tournament player on the board with me.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first round, I was England, and Adam Siegel was France.
Yep.
In the Saturday night round.
And our guest from the last episode was England in that, I believe.
No, Germany.
Or Germany, I mean.
Germany, yeah. Siobhan was Germany.
Yeah.
In my Saturday night round, I was Austria, and Doc Binder was Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And Randy Lawrence Hurt was Germany.
Oh, yeah.
Another good player. Yeah.
Up and comer.
And then, in my final round, I was France, and Dave Maletsky was Germany.
Mm.
So in every one of those rounds, and I did top every one of my boards, I had to find a way to deal with those other excellent players.
Yep.
And so the story I want to tell you about this is that you've heard the expression lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds sounds businessy.
So I did that. I did one of those in each of the games. All right, so that's kind of my frame for it, right? Sometimes you need to be the leader. You need to seize. You need to take control. Sometimes you got to let somebody else take control. And sometimes you just need to step back and let things happen so that you can have a good result. So let's start with the one where I gotta say
the last one sounds the best to me.
I'm writing down my guesses for which are which, but I'm not gonna say anything out loud.
Right. So in the Saturday night round, I was Austria, and as I said, Doc was Turkey. Laurent Jolie, the French player who has that awesome database, the World Diplomacy database, was Italy. And there was a player playing in his very first tournament as Russia.
Wow.
Yes. And so on the other side of the board, we had Randy in Germany, we had Eric Grenell, another good player in France, and then a replacement player, actually, for the aforementioned Brian Sheldon, who was out with family and wasn't able to get back to the tournament in time. So we had somebody who had been going to sit out, and he was in as a replacement for that position. So it worked out that it was pretty easy for me to convince Russia to work with me. He came to me and said, "Chris, I just want a good result. I want to work with you. I'm going to make this happen. I don't care," he said to me, I swear, in our spring 1901 negotiations, "if that means I'm going to throw you a solo, I just want a good result."
God, I hate when they do that.
I said out loud, I said, "Okay." On the inside, I said, "I'm going to have to explain that to him at some point."
After this game.
Yeah, not at the moment. I didn't want to spoil his enthusiasm.
Right, you know. He clearly had an idea. So, you know, let him do it.
Yeah. So we didn't. We agreed not to bounce in Galicia. And Laurent and I just sort of started with a DMZ. And so I sent everything south, right? I went to Budapest, to Serbia, and Vienna to Budapest.
Love
and
that
south
opening.
As well. And then I went to Doc, and Doc and I have a long history of not working with each other, right? I have a reminder on my iPhone, right, in the notes section that says, "There are no set of circumstances under which Doc will work with you." Whenever I play with him,
like you're the
call it out and remind myself.
You
yeah,
can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I forget, right? And he came to me and said, Chris, this is the game. We're going to make it happen. You know, Austria, Turkey, good alliance. We can do this. I said, okay, Doc. So that being the case, you could support me in Romania or I could support you in Romania. But since we've had such a troubled history together and I've gotten the shaft more often than not, why don't you support me into Romania? He said, okay, I'll do that.
And you looked at your phone.
And I was like, sure you will. So I went to Russia and I said, hey, Russia, you know, you got to make sure you don't lose the Black Sea. Doc, why don't you just support me into Romania, and then I'll take Bulgaria next year. You came to me and said, hey, I don't care if I throw you a solo. I just want a good result. This is what let's do it. Show me you mean business, right? So he says, okay. We come back after that to read the follow orders. And in the spring, England had opened to the channel, right? Successfully opened the channel against Air France. And Randy goes, ha, 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 and builds three, right? The convoy, he gets balanced, doesn't work, you know, Eric defends correctly. But Randy, as Germany, goes to six. And then we get around and read my orders, and sure enough, both Russia and Turkey supported me into Romania.
Into Romania, so you also built three.
Right. So, and I also built three. And Randy just looked across the table at me and went like, God damn it, Chris. And the rest of the game went exactly like that. We killed Doc in 1902.
Wow.
And we ran an AIR alliance until we owned 32 of the 34 centers.
What?
Yeah. 13-9-9-2, I think. I think Eric had two left, or maybe Eric and England both had one left by the time the game ended.
Oh.
And it was like 1907. It didn't take long.
Oh my goodness. Did you own Belgium?
It was awesome. It was terrible. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever played diplomacy with Eric Grenell. He handled it with a tact and aplomb for which he is famous.
Oh, I bet he did.
Yeah. He did not actually throw anything.
So hey, that's a win. That is a win.
Yes, that's a win. But he was very upset that they would let me write their orders for them and they would just roll over for me. And I'm like, you know, this is the carnage scoring system. They're going to split, you know, third, second place points and get good dot counts. And I did eventually explain to Russia, hey, you don't want to let me stab you, right? Because you want to get a good result. And I explained that if you let me get a solo, you get 0 points. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, oh, well, okay, I can't do that.
Better not do that.
So I said, hey, you know, you're getting builds. Just put down armies in your home centers and then don't move them. And because we don't need those units to mop them up. And then I can't stab you, you know. I mean, not that I couldn't maybe out-tactic you, but I mean, I don't really need to, right? Right. We get a good result together here.
So sometimes
like,
you got to leave.
Great, thank you.
Yes.
That's it. So I led until Eric owned Paris and England owned Liverpool or something, and then we took the draw, right?
So in this game, you sensed immediately that this was your game to lead, probably. You
I felt like, when Russia came to me, and Laurent is a great player, mm-hmm. good ally, but he wasn't, you know, not a real dynamic, you know, here's my plan, let's go do it. Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and I just led the way across the line. So that was my leading experience, right?
So, sometimes, the reason that you sensed that, I just want to drill down just a little tiny bit. The reason that you sensed it was that you've got, you're Austria, you've got your shark in Turkey, basically.
Yes.
Like your guy, and you somebody that you have some history with, and then you've got willing allies the other places. Like you basically, the biggest thing that happened for you in that game happened like pre-Spring 01, it sounds like.
Yes, I got the draw I needed, right?
Yep.
I got Austria. I mean, the thing that you worry about right now is Austria, is that Russia and Italy are going to get together and squeeze you between them.
That's
after
right.
Turkey's out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was never worried about that. It was not really an issue.
Right.
They weren't looking for that fight.
Right.
So we just went ahead and rolled it across. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Just a last question on this thing. So how much of your decision-making was, after you'd gotten everything, or even actually when you heard the board call and you looked across the line and you looked at you as Austria in the middle in the east and you looked at the west...
Yeah.
And you knew that the West was going to move and it was going to move fast. Was that really, did that come into your calculations? And you're like, oh, thank golly, Russia came to me because I really needed something like this. Or was it really, were you just ignoring the other theater and focused on the here and now?
Well, when Randy went to 6, right, and he was encouraging the attack on France, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
He was clearly planning on rolling in and plowing into that. I thought, okay, what happens if I work with Doc, right? How does that work out?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's put me in Romania, and then I'm going to get 7, and I got to give him Greece, right? And then I got to roll my armies in Moscow and Warsaw and up into Germany, and Randy's already going to be getting big, right? Because
he
looks like that. And just the math doesn't make sense, right? With Doc behind me as Turkey?
Yeah.
No, you're just going to get
somebody
switched.
Else? Yeah, exactly. He just, you know, even if he plays it totally straight and builds fleets, and goes out and never stabs me,
yeah.
I think I get a better result by killing him.
Right, and I think that's really what I wanted our listeners to kind of think about.
Right.
Sometimes,
okay.
even if you have the option of a good ally, a world-class, I mean, Doc,
right.
Doc's
so,
a
yeah.
world-class
I can count
player.
On him to write good orders,
right.
You know, which you can't, you know.
Well, right.
I didn't know this guy in Russia from Adam. He could have been horrible at writing orders, right? He might have not listened. He might have jumped around.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, Doc's a world champion. He's one. He's a great player. And sometimes you have to look at what's on the other side and go, well, even though this is a great player, I'm going to have to go with this great deal, sight unseen. I don't know how this Russian player is going to act. But if I do it the safer way and work with the
mm-hmm.
player that's really good, I'm not going to get a good result. And that's why you're the champ.
We talk about this on the show sometimes, like when you want to side with the strong player, when you want to side with the weak player, and I think everybody sort of has their tendency. I think everybody kind of like has their own innate preference on that. But I also think that the more we talk about the issue, the more I'm coming to realize that it's one of those it depends kind of questions.
Sure. Yeah. Where, it really does.
Yeah.
For my money, I tend to find, in my experience, right?
Yeah.
I try to come to the game with a blank slate because I've played a lot of games of diplomacy with a lot of people and I try not to bring a lot of history to it,
mm-hmm.
right? Unless I set a reminder on my phone to just really keep this in mind that this has not worked out for you in the past.
Yep.
But what tends to happen is, for the good players, you spend the first kind of opening years of diplomacy trying to get the players you don't know to work with you,
yeah.
right? because you feel like, okay, I've played a lot of games of diplomacy with that guy. He's really good. We will end up at about the same center count because he will demand that, right?
Yeah.
As a good player, and as will I. And if we can get, you know, the people we don't know as well, maybe that will work out better for us.
Mm-hmm.
When we work together is when that doesn't work and the people we don't know all attack both of us.
Right.
So, yeah, which happens on 3 or 4, I work a lot with the other really good players.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
So tell us. So,
Act Two.
My guess was already
act
wrong
two.
About which one was the leading one in the all the stuff. I could still hit one of them.
Okay. Some players have a real definite sense of what should happen in a game of diplomacy.
Yes.
And a lot of times it's easier to just let that happen than to try and fight it. In my opinion, Dave Maletsky is one of those players.
I got one of them right.
You know, he sees the board. He's really good at tactics. He's when he invests the energy, he can be really good at the diplomacy end of it. But he's sometimes just like, oh, well, this is just how this ought to go. So let's just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Some players you never want to be the first one to attack. Always be the second person to attack them, right? Dave is, you know, maybe the third. It's Dave, right? So in this game, I was France, Dave was Germany, and Don Woodring was England. Yes. So now Don
I'm sure
and I
those
had...
people at home don't know the implication of that one. We'll call him a wild card. Is that fair?
He's a great guy.
Don is a great guy. He really loves playing diplomacy, and his sons both play diplomacy, and both of his sons were here in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and Conrad now is living in England, and Graham is living in Texas, so it was kind of a family thing for him, right? That's why he was there, and he's a good diplomacy player, likes to play the game.
Yeah.
He and Dave are really good friends as well, right?
It's true.
So, on the other side of the board, I had a new player in Austria, a new player in Italy, a young lady from the Boston area. I want to say she's 15 years old.
Oh, boy.
She started playing, like, at Carnage last year and came in 7th, I think, at Carnage last year. And she's done pretty well. She is a capable diplomacy player for as little experience as she has. And playing with the big boys, right? So it's not like they don't try and beat her up, too, sometimes. So, and the other player, Russia, was Jay Human. So Jay is another good player.
Yep.
Played a lot of diplomacy, knows how to push the pieces around.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, so the context here is this was the Sunday morning round. This is the timed round for the tournament. Now, I have two board tops. David Hood has two board tops and a tie for top. And he's leaving. He's not playing today. He's leaving early. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me to win, I have to top the board. Right, David Hood's in the next place. And nobody else in the round has to get a solo. I think that going in, that's what I understand. The other piece of context is the night before, on the Saturday night round, Dave Maletsky got to 15 centers, but couldn't force the solo.
Mm.
And ended up with that was his lone good result, right? So under his scoring system, and he's the kind of architect of it, in order to win the tournament now, as Germany, with me in France, he needs to get a solo. And our opening negotiation is like, yeah, maybe that'll happen in another ranked game. But, you know, this is a timed round. Let's just, you know, I'm like, you just want to do a Western triple? He's like, yeah, let's just do a Western triple.
Right? Like you do.
And I go to Don and I say, hey, Don, you know, Dave says he wants to do a Western triple. And Don goes, no, that's what he told me. So I'll go, that's what we're going to do. I'm like, okay. And that's what I do. And so we roll out, and, you know, and there's no surprises. I send both of my armies. I opened in such a way that if Germany and France and Don and Dave had been sort of just trying to blow smoke up my skirt and actually came and invaded me, I'd be able to defend.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. So I built 2 fleets and started swinging around the horn. So come spring of 1902, Jay Human in Russia goes, oh, hey, it's a Western triple.
Sure.
Look, there's an English fleet in the Barents Sea, and Germany, you know, built 2, and nobody took, you know, Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, guys. We got to So he goes and starts to rally the troops. And
right.
He's
Huey, Dewey, Louie, I need to talk to you all.
Yeah, yeah. He does that, right?
Yeah.
He makes one crucial error, and I would advise our listeners, if you find yourself in this position, don't leave Italy out of that conversation.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. So he got Turkey to agree to work with Austria to go and take the Ionian Sea and kind of replace Italy and try and stop me at Italy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Austrian armies and Russian armies showed up right on the border of Munich, right? So Dave Maletsky is kind of shut down. Don eventually takes St. Petersburg. But because before I can even get my fleets into position to attack Italy, they forced the Ionian Sea and are talking. And I'm like, oh, are they talking to you about this whole Stop the Leader Alliance thing?
Right.
And stopping the Western Triple? And he goes, yeah, no, nobody's really talked to me.
And this is, and you like, said oh, he's really new, right?
Yeah, this is a new player, right?
Oh, so they basically just said, oh, we're going to just sacrifice Italy because he's
exactly.
new, maybe. And
they just didn't have time or he wasn't adjacent because it was Jay who was kind of driving it, I think.
Right.
Because he's the other player over there with experience, and maybe he just didn't have enough time to get mm-hmm. Italy into that. I don't know what that thought process was for him. But, so Italy ended up letting me convoy armies, and I convoyed an army into Tuscany and went through Tyrolia, and I went around him and took Greece and Trieste, and then I stabbed him for all his ducks. And ended up on, 12th, right?
Yeah.
As France. And so at that point, Dave and Don were like, oh, good, here's a fleet in the English Channel and armies in Munich and Ruhr and Belgium, Chris. You're not going to get a solo. And I was like, hey, let's take a draw, you know?
Right.
So in that game, I just followed Dave's lead, right? I said, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to pick a fight with these guys. That's the way it needs to go. And then Jay was like, ah, we got to stop them. And he stopped the people who were close to him. And he never lost anything but St. Pete, you know? But he didn't quite manage to get the whole line locked down, and I was able to talk Italy into sort of letting me, you know, prop him up and come through him until I realized, well, okay, if to top this board, I'm going to have to get the dots, and so I took him in the end of the game.
And did you say that was his first tournament, the Italian?
I don't know if that was his first tournament, but he was pretty new, right? He might have played there last year.
Okay. The reason I ask is because I just always remember my first tournament when I managed to, throw a first place at the entire tournament as well. So that guy can carry that with him for his entire life.
He can carry that to him. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing was that eventually what made it all work is that eventually Turkey did the thing that turkeys always do, and that was stab for everything around the Black Sea.
Because they got more defending against a Western Triple.
Yeah.
Right.
She was like, oh, now France is holding the Ionian, and I'm fleet Eastern Med, fleet Aegean, fleet Greece. Mm-hmm. And she came to me and said, hey, Chris, why don't we work together to cut out the Austrian? And I said, okay.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Sounds like
and
fun.
And so she took her, she went and took some of his dots, and I sported into her dot, and she sported me into a dot. And it just, it broke my way. That's what ended up happening there. Because I was following the terrain, right? I didn't fight the channel of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I think the important thing to remember, I think the framework you're using is great. But the lesson I want to highlight is the thing we've already talked about, the not forgetting to include people. So in your diplomacy, listeners, you want to make sure you're on a time crunch. We get that. But the worst thing that can happen is that accidentally alienate someone that you really need on your side.
Yep.
And just assuming, which may or may not have happened, don't ever assume that someone that you need to hold a line understands that they are crucial to holding the line, because it's all about hearts and minds, right? The reason Chris was able to do this is because the Italian felt abandoned and felt that, well, at least this guy who's apparently attacking me is being nice to me. These other people just threw me to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember that even a couple of words, and don't assume that people are going to act in what you think is their self-interest.
And I've been guilty of this.
Oh, it's not, there's no guilt.
Yeah, sure, we all have, right?
Yeah.
where I was like, well, why didn't I just talk to that guy that I really needed to help me? He probably would have helped me.
Some talk is always better than no talk, even if it's like 15 seconds to just say, I'm really sorry, I had to do this thing, hold on, we're going to do this together. Whatever you need to do, but don't ever talk, you know.
Yeah.
So I've got kind of a hot level suggestion here, right? And this is tough. And I talked to Jay about this after the game, right?
Yeah.
In order to secure Turkey not attacking him and Austria while they held their part of the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had to sell her on getting Italian dots.
Sure.
Okay? And what he needed to do, in my estimation, at the same time, was to talk to Italy separately, right, and say, hey, look, you know France is coming, right? Why don't you get your fleet into Tunis, let Turkey have the Ionian, right? Then you'll use those three fleets to lock that line down and your armies, and eventually they'll attack each other, right? And then, you know, Austria and I will go get, make sure Turkey doesn't hurt you, and then you can get into France. Whatever he needed to pitch, right, to make sure that that happened, right? Like, he didn't, like, he couldn't, the thing he couldn't do was get all four of them together,
right?
And we've got to have a quad to stop that triple.
Yeah, there's a reason why you've never heard of the Eastern Quadruple. It doesn't really work.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, all I'm saying is that, you know, if you need to have those separate, I mean, that's kind of the art of telling the different people the things they need to hear in that moment. When Jay needed to lead in that situation,
right?
He needed to lead out of that.
And mind you, he could have been selling the Turk at the same time on, well, let's just do this for a little while and then we'll stab Italy when they go fighting each other, right?
And I think the really the lesson is, make sure, don't make sure, be okay with the fact that you're going to tell different people completely different stories.
Yep.
Like, sometimes you could be a little leery of that because you know other players are going to talk and they're going to sell different stories. Sometimes you have to look at it and, like, you know what? I can deny that and they can just deal with it. But there's the path of me not telling two different stories is me not winning or prevailing.
So, and sometimes you need to say, hey, Italy, I'm going to tell Turkey that she's going to get your dots, but I'm not going to let that happen. It's just the only way to keep her on board, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so, you know.
Do what you can to mitigate it, but you can't, like, I agree, like, you that's what I wanted to make sure that our listeners understood. You cut somebody out, and you've really just closed a very big door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so Act 3.
For somebody else.
Yeah. Act 3.
Yeah, we can move on if we're done with that one. That game depressed me because it had a Western triple.
So get out of the way. Now, Eric, did you have the follow one correct, at least?
I had the follow one correct.
But okay, obviously, all right. So I got the other two switched around. You had the get out of the way one correct.
Well, I can't have.
All right.
Yeah.
So, this is the first, it was the opening round, right?
Yeah.
Adam Siegel and I actually drove up together from D.C.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you do, you know, even before a tournament, you talk about stuff, you talk about how things are going to go. And one of the things he gives me a hard time about is this this very true, I think.
Is this your article?
A philosophy that I hold, that London, Flee London, should more often than not go to the English Channel.
I don't know
if you've heard that.
I don't believe that anyone has heard that for at least more than a couple of minutes before they start festival.
All I want to say, listeners, is that Chris Martin, many, many years ago, I think now, was given a writing assignment. And he not only took that writing assignment to hysterical and hilarious ends, he's been writing and trading on that article for at least 10 years now.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it is amazing. He's now, like, absolutely associated with this idea.
Did you forget the part about how he read the entire thing out loud?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
I know.
I
assume our listeners, even the devout ones, skipped that.
There's probably
several,
like,
of them didn't. Several of them have told me they listened to the whole thing.
Yeah. God bless them if they did.
Just, it's amazing. Yeah. So anyway, I think it's a great philosophy, by the way. I'm one of your followers. I'm one of your disciples.
Well, thank you. Excellent. And lo, how much, so Adam and I are good players, right? Siobhan is a good player. Yes. Clearly we're going to be trying to play for her affections, if you will.
Sure. She I will say, just to interrupt and then I'll let you go, she did text me as soon as the board call happened and said, oh my God.
Yeah. Adam Siegel, that she's been playing with since they were both 13 years old or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, how much of that first, you know, we have basically 15 minutes of diplomacy, do you think Adam and I spent with each other talking about whether or not we would go to the English Channel?
I hope less than 10 seconds.
5 full minutes.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess.
Oh, man, really?
So I know we were talking about this in the car, but I'm totally not going to the English Channel. No, me either. Why would I go to the English
Channel? No, no. No, it went exactly the opposite way.
Well, we can bounce it.
You know I'm going to the English Channel.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I mean, okay. And I said, great, okay, so you're going to bounce me or you're going to let me in? Because I'll just go to Belgium. He's like, well, I got to think about, I mean, what does that mean? And if you played with Adam, he likes to talk things through,
sure,
right? So I let him do that. And we left it with, I said, I'm going to the channel and we'll see what you do, right?
Oh.
So,
I would have gone to the channel if I was Adam.
Yeah, you would have just saved the time. So it turns out he does go to the channel,
yeah,
right?
So you guys bounce.
And we bounce, right? So he and Siobhan have talked about Burgundy. And he said that he's going to move to Burgundy. And Siobhan was like, okay, I understand. And they didn't agree, evidently, that Adam would make to Burgundy, or that there would be a bounce there, right? So Adam opens, you know, Paris to Burgundy, Marseille to Spain, and we bounce the channel. Well, in my conversations with Italy, I was like, you know, Adam and I are bouncing in the channel, or I said, I'm moving there, right? And you probably don't want to move to Piedmont unless you talk to Siobhan and she's on board with it, right? Because if all three of us are going for him, then you want to be in on that. You want a piece of the pie, right?
Of course.
And I said, okay, so, you know, have fun over on your side of the board, whatever. And Siobhan and I were talking, and I was like, you know, okay, I'm going to bounce that, so I'm gonna go up there and, you know, try and get something in Scandinavia. We'll see, right? And she's like, oh, I don't know who I'm going to work with. How am I going to make this? What are we going to do? And I'm like, well, let's just see how the rest of the board shakes out, right? So she opens to Denmark and Ruhr. Denmark and Kiel with the fleet goes to Denmark, Army Berlin goes to Kiel, and she goes to Burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam ends up being bounced back into Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And
Brest.
Russia and Brest.
Yeah.
And Russia opens north, right?
Oh, God.
Russia, of course, because this is all everybody knows. This is no secret, right?
Yeah.
Italy opens to Piedmont.
Oh, wow, that's a mess.
Yeah, so Adam is looking at this and is like, do I go back to, he's like, Siobhan, why did you do that? And she's like, hey, you said you're going to Burgundy. And I said, okay. I didn't say, okay, you can get there, right? he's like, oh, dude. Because, you know, you kind of assume when you're France and you tell Germany you're going to Burgundy, they assume you're going to support it, right? So they don't waste the time moving there,
yeah,
right? You have wasted tempo. So poor Adam couldn't catch a break from there. And Italy just kind of built a fleet and kept the pressure on him and kept moving over. And I bounced with him in the channel again in the fall. And convoyed to Belgium, right? Because I didn't get Norway. Because Russia had opened north, so I didn't even try.
But nobody else had any interest in Belgium whatsoever,
apparently.
So.
But nobody else was adjacent.
Right
exactly.
Right?
It was there for the taking.
Yeah, I get my one guaranteed build, and I'm like, hey, Adam, you can let me out of London, because I'm moving to the English Channel, but maybe you don't want to. It's a tough choice, right? Move that fleet to the Mid-Atlantic Ocean, and let me have Army Belgium fleet English Channel. You're welcome to spring 1902, right? Or at least bounce me. He did bounce me, and he lost Marseille.
Wow.
Yeah, he went to Portugal and hoped that Italy wouldn't take the bait. So he didn't build, and he didn't ever build. as I just kind of followed in, and, you know, he took Marseille back, and I took Brest, and then he lost Marseille to Germany, and I took Portugal or Paris. Yeah, so I ended up with, I was on 5 or 6, and Germany was on, you know, Siobhan was on 5 or 6, and so the momentum just kind of pushed us, and I got out of the way of that. I didn't ask her to make a decision one way or the other. She just kind of chose.
They managed to start their own war, yeah.
Yeah, she, I got out of the way, and she decided that at the end of the day, she would rather take the chance on working with me than the chance on working with Adam.
Yeah.
And so, with I was able to get up into Scandinavia and take those dots back because Russia had some pressure on the other side, and she, because she swings her armies out, and just before she is able to take a dot off of Austria, Warsaw or in Austria, she doesn't get anything over there yet, but she's got to have all of her armies over there, right? Yeah. I have given her Belgium, so she owns Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Paris, right?
All of which she loses.
Yeah.
She loses. She lost 3 of them, you know, in the one turn that I, and she was like, yeah, I felt like I'd have been disappointed if you didn't do that, because it's my job to get the build to hold that stuff. So I ended up topping the board on, you know, 10 or 12.
Right. And you didn't have to do anything except just let wars happen to other people and clean up the pieces.
I got out of the way, right? And then, you know, you got to know that the stab, you have to know to take that stab, right?
Because,
you tempted, you know, I haven't broken into bed. If I'm trying to get a solo, stabbing there is maybe not the right answer.
I love the theme. I love the guiding principle of the
thoughts
there.
You. Yeah, lead follower, get out of the way.
I liked it. But now if we were to get philosophical for a moment and say...
Yes,
how do you know... how do you trust your own instincts? Like, where do you learn how to trust your own instincts on questions like, do I lead, do I follow, or do I get out of the way?
Right. How do you make that read?
Other than just practice.
Well, you know, I was going to say practice.
10,000 hours, you outlier.
You got to play a lot of games to see how it breaks. It helps to know the players.
Yeah.
And then even when you don't know the players, it helps to know sort of the types of players, right?
Okay.
So that you can see when somebody is being squirrely, right? Like, they'll tell you that they're working with you, but then the story doesn't quite hang together. And so you got to know, you got to keep an extra close eye on them. You don't want to, if you find yourself saying, gosh, if they just this one time do what they say they're going to do, I'll get out of this hole and it's all going to work. That's the moment to step back and say, yeah, no, they're not going to do it.
They're probably not going to do that, yeah.
Yeah, they're absolutely not going to do that, right? And it's really tough to know when to change gears. Because some games, you've just got to tell the truth a lot.
Yeah.
And be completely straight with your allies and be honorable with the people that you're fighting. And then some games, you've just got to be a stabby, lying bastard and never tell the truth, right? And then smile and laugh about it and be like, you got me that time. No, I'm done.
I'm all finished now.
But how do you know when, right?
Right.
You just got to play the game, you know?
Yeah.
And for my money, face-to-face, is gives you that experience. Email does not.
Right.
In email games, you get the analysis, and you can make much better moves, right? Can much more tactically sound moves because you can able to work out and how's it going to break down. You get more time to communicate. But like in face to face, you're looking at them, and you've got to choose now and go.
When you said earlier, I feel like you were sort of on the verge of something. Let me try and formulate the question here. If you're playing with a bunch of people that you've never played with before, you said earlier the thing about playing with good players versus newer players, and the fact that with good players you have to spend a bunch of time dealing with the fact that they're going to know enough to say, well, for every dot you get, I get a dot.
Or
1.25, so you don't notice that it's 1.25 and I get that little bit more than you, and that's their game a lot of the time, the better players.
Exactly.
If you're if you're playing an online game, or if you're at your first tournament playing against six strangers, or something of the sort, would you agree that that's like one of the first things you could try and suss out to try and figure out like what happens next? If you were to ask one question about an opponent who's a stranger, maybe it's, is he the kind of guy that's going to want a dot for every dot?
But how do you determine that, right, Eric?
Yeah, that's the question, right?
Yeah. Well, that's my question.
Here's what I would say. I would say that this is the wrong question for that situation.
Okay.
Right? Because if it's your very first face-to-face tournament, mm-hmm. right, your goal should be, in my mind, to survive one game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you do better than that, and there are people who come out for their first tournament, they do great, right? Yeah. But like, I remember, and to have fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
My first tournament, I had two eliminations and a one center survival.
Nice.
And in that game where I had the one center survival, I had the most fun I had had playing any kind of game, right, in a long time, because the people were good, we were laughing about it, it didn't get into this sort of hostile, negative energy, which sometimes happens in diplomacy,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I came back and I played more diplomacy, right? You want to kind of be thinking, okay, what's going on here? Who are these people? What are they doing? How can I make this work? You want to have a plan. You want to find somebody who will listen to you and work with your plan, but you just got to, like, be your baseline expectation, survive the game. And there's lots of different strategies for that, right? We've talked about that. I think we have even on the show perhaps talked about this, right? You can hitch your wagon
to a star. Hitch your wagon to a star.
Conservative. You can just be like, you know, you could be overwhelmed and be like, okay, I'm not going to attack anybody, but nobody's getting past these defenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever it is you have to do, so that the second time that you go to a tournament, you know some people, you recognize some faces, you've studied a little bit, you've looked at what happened, and you can make better decisions then. Then you can start to say, okay, I've seen this happen before, where that kind of move happens, and this is the way it went. And you'll be wrong, because there are 17 different things that can happen, right? But at least you're making that analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, that is a huge part of the face-to-face game is, you know, not like have all the friends so you have all the automatic alliances or anything like that, but just remember what happened last time. Like learn the tendencies, spend the time after the game to be like, oh, did you do this because you're just the kind of player that does this kind of stuff? Or you know, like just anything that you can add to your little book is great.
Back to the book again.
Do you guys remember sitting around the table and having postmortems, right? Every game.
That's of
right.
course.
And they're,
that's
they're,
the thing when you're the new player, ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What did I do wrong? And then you're going to be like, well, a long time ago, right?
Right.
The first thing they will tell you is don't listen to Chris Martin.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They're just bitter. Can I just say those people are just bitter?
Bitter and wise.
Yeah.
Bitter in that way that you would, like a young child whose hand has been burned on the element. But wait a minute.
Well,
if someone was looking at their phone and the notes in it, don't trust Chris Martin ever under any
circumstances.
A cat who has jumped onto a hot stove will never jump onto a hot stove again.
Yeah.
But neither will they ever jump onto a cold stove.
This is true. It's all about the opportunities, right?
And I think that we have actually made this caveat before, but since we're talking about it right now, it seems worth mentioning again. sometimes you ask the people after the game, what should I have done, or what could I have done, or what did I do wrong? And sometimes they still feed you a total line of crap.
Yeah.
A total line of crap. Just because they say it doesn't mean it's
self-serving crap, right?
Self-serving crap. Like I have very clear memories of my first two or three or four tournaments trying to do this stuff, and then just having somebody say like the most ridiculous, oh, if you would have just attacked Russia from Spring 01, I totally would have worked with you. And like that was never true, and it took me like a while past then to think back and be like, oh no, he was just saying that to like get out of this uncomfortable situation where really the answer was he attacked
me
because he
didn't know. Maybe the better question is, ask the player, how did you know who you were going to work with by the time you finish 1902, right?
Like, exactly.
Or how, maybe it's not like a tactical thing. It's like, or did I do or say something that made you feel like you couldn't work with me if they chose not to, or right. if they did? It's like, hey, I really enjoyed this, but I want to know, right? Mm-hmm. How did you make that decision, right? Because those are the things that are a little bit harder. And if you ask them about what they did, they're more likely to give you something that's maybe useful than, yeah. than you know, how can I improve my play? You know?
But even if some of it's BS.
It's really not attack me.
Yeah. yeah, right, exactly. Even if some of it's BS, there's some nuggets in there right. to learn from.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, we're in a sort of a golden era of board games, and there's everyone's lots of people are playing board games right now, and some yep. of them are extremely complex and they take a long time to learn, and they all have different ways yep. of doing things. There's a lot of yep. pieces, there are a lot of cards, and one of the things that I would say, because I think a lot of our listeners are also, they play a lot of other board games, most likely
probably
and they know that any board game, when they first played it, it took them a while to learn. They had to read all the cards, they had yep. to read all the pieces, they yep. had to like memorize the rules and the interplay of the rules. The interesting thing about diplomacy is it's exactly the same, except that instead of having a nice, neat little like card that yeah. describes what this player does, you have to sort of suss that out yourself. Mm-hmm. The game pieces yeah. aren't just what's on the board. The board is just the lens. The game pieces are the other players, and you have to figure out how those game pieces, players, work. And it takes time to do that. The same way it takes time to sit down at a board game and read all the cards and understand that this card does this. Yeah. And when you put these two cards together, it's explosive. Like, it just takes a long time. And the fun is the game pieces, the game dynamics is the players instead of, you know, some right. inert piece of cardboard.
Sure. Tap Dave Maletsky to ruin the game.
Exactly. And I think if a lot of players start thinking about this board game that way, it becomes a little bit more approachable, and it's a lot less of like, oh, it's an automatic alliance, and instead of, oh, yeah. these are people that have spent a lot more time learning how the pieces yeah. interact.
Good point.
Yeah. The thing that diplomacy players then figure out is that every multiplayer game is a game of diplomacy.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter, you know. Have you seen this, you know Matt Inman, who does the oatmeal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Webcomic? Yeah, he did a game called Exploding Kittens.
Yeah, right?
So it's a funny, silly card game, right, where you're trying to be the last person to die, right? You're the only person not to die, right, as you go through the deck of cards. And so I was teaching it this weekend to my brother and his sons and some of their friends, and so you got a mix of people from me in their 40s and teens and early teens, preteens. And as soon as the game starts to go, my brother looks up at me and goes like, oh, you're going to have to negotiate in this game, aren't you? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? And when his son goes, wait, don't do that. I've got another card that's going to let him die, but only if you don't do that. I'm like, yeah, it's diplomacy.
Welcome to diplomacy, my friends.
Welcome to diplomacy, exactly. And a bunch of the kids were like, we're going to go over and play Risk. Uncle Chris, that's a great board game, isn't it? And I'm like, yeah, it's a fine board game. If you like games with dice, you know, it's fine. It's like, oh, is it not serious enough? Do you prefer things like Axis and Allies? And I'm like, you know, yeah, Axis and Allies, another fine game, you know. If you like games with dice, you know, and randomness. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, well, you know, real people, you know, people who play real games play diplomacy. You know? But you can learn from all of those games. And I play a lot of those games. I started playing Axis and Allies, and I didn't play it as a kid. But there's, you know, in the interaction of their Risk game, yeah. they came back and said, yeah, the one guy who always wins, he just turtles up in Australia. He's like, you know, he started to do that again, and we looked at each other and we were like, screw that, man.
Let's get him.
And we killed him.
Yeah.
And then we fought amongst themselves, and I held Europe for like 3 turns, and I'm like, you did? At Risk? How'd you do that? You know, and I'm like, and then I won. I'm like, oh, well, congratulations. The important lesson was you killed the guy who always wins.
Yeah, yeah, that's
before he got a chance to.
You're right for diplomacy.
Yeah, I feel like with the guy that always wins as our interview guest, we should maybe like wrap it up there.
That's perfect.
With that lesson for our listeners.
No, lesson.
Outsmarted Chris at last.
Chris, thanks so much for talking with us again. This is it's always a pleasure, and We always learn a lot when we chat with you.
Thanks for pretending to be Nathan that one time on that April Fool's episode.
Oh, thank you. That was so much fun. I honestly think Siobhan and I, if we ever get our act together, would do our own little video blog for diplomacy. I think that would be a good fun idea to add it in. Because you guys, I don't know if you know, because I'm told you don't leave the town of Seattle anymore.
Yeah.
Something about a restraining order.
That's but, right. That's right.
Yeah, that's what you call my daughter. That's fine. You call her a restraining order.
All over this country, man. All over the world. People listen to this. They really appreciate what you do. And what you're doing for diplomacy is awesome, and I really appreciate it.
And so you want to move in.
I can't tell you guys enough. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
No, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We're wrapping it up. Enjoy Vegas.
Oh, hey, what episode number is this? I've lost track.
30.
Somebody was asking me.
38.
38.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you guys very much. Have a good night. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Talk to you soon, Chris. Bye. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Make a noise. We need a new outro. Come on, Myrna. Come on, Myrna. You're totally not going to do it, are you? Oh, my God. She just yawned.
Say something.
Oh. Now I feel bad. For Eric Mead, this is Nathan and Myrna Barnes signing off.
Sad time.